Hey, listen up.
Yeah, we here and we locked in. Let's keep it going all the way to the top 10. We fear the turtle, so it's no other option. Fred and Ryan, just watch them. Let's take it to the max.
It's the Shell and Tell.
They come with all the facts.
It's the Shell and Tell.
Let's take it to the max.
It's the Shell and Tell.
They come with all the facts.
It's the Shell and Tell.
Terp fans, welcome back to another episode of the Shell and Tell podcast. Fred, Ryan, Ahmed, it's been a crazy, for me, it's been a crazy 48 hours between the Terps' big win out in Illinois and the Ravens' win last night. I'm working off of very minimal sleep at this point, but well worth it.
Absolutely worth it. You know, being at the Ravens Stadium this week, feeling that energy just gets me excited for the Terps games that could come, the big things we're looking forward to. This week, we got that W, but there was some questionable play calling, especially in the red zone. Too many penalties and some really costly turnovers that just scared us a little more than we wanted to be scared that week.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, Maryland enters week four with a perfect 3-0 record, first time since 2016. And now they're going to shoot for that 4-0 record, which will again match that mark that was set in 2016. So set to face Kent State this weekend, 3:30 p.m. kickoff, and what should be the final tune-up game before next Friday night's game against Iowa.
Oh, man, my anxiety is going to be crazy for the next week and a half, 2 weeks, Ryan. I don't know if I'm going to be able to control myself.
It's going to be a good week, man.
It is. It is. Like you said, 3-0 for the first time since 2015 with a big win, 20-17 over the Illini. It wasn't as easy of a game as I don't think any of us hoped it would be.
It was close to an easy game. There were moments where it could have been a blowout.
There were those game-changing moments that could have affected this game one way or the other and could have made this a much easier game on all of us.
But they decided not to go that way.
No, a roller coaster of emotions. There were obviously some bad penalties, some questionable play calling, costly turnovers in this game, a lot of things that we're going to get into.
Yeah, big things going on here were the penalties that called back touchdowns, the fumbles in the red zone, the just stalling in the red zone, and you just can't have that when it comes to a more superior opponent. Luckily, when you looked at it, the talent truly was on our side of the field this week, and it broke the our way.
Yeah, I think it was kind of the first time where Maryland fans saw that Maryland was kind of their biggest, their biggest obstacle in front of themselves was just their lack of execution at times. So, it's a little disappointing. Obviously, you know, plenty of room for improvement kind of going into week four. But, at the end of the day, it's 3-0, and I'm not sure this team 2 years ago had the discipline to pull that out.
Yeah, I mean, this historically was a game that the Terps would have found a way to have lost. So if we're going to hang our hat on anything, regardless if it looked pretty or not, they figured out a way to win it. And again, to Ryan's point earlier, I mean, there were a couple plays in this game which could have easily turned the outcome of this game another way. Like we talk about in the red zone, you're driving and you got Teyon Fleet Davis with the fumble with a chance to go up 17-3 in that game late in the third. But that changes everything.
Absolutely changes everything. You could have gone up 17-3 instead. It's 10-10 tie. Even before that, some of the problems we drove down the field like it was nothing into the red zone, and then Loxley with the call of a reverse inside the 20. I just hate that call. With a reverse, it's a high risk, high reward type play for me, where you have an opportunity to lose 10 yards because you're handing the ball off late that deep behind the line, but you have the chance of catching, you know, however much you need, an 80 yard run down the sidelines because you got people going the wrong way. But when you're in the red zone, you can lose 10 but gain 20. That the risk reward's not there for me. So I have no, they need to take that out of the bag. And unless they're on their side of the field, they don't need to use it anymore.
Yeah, I kind of just thought the play calling in general, play calling and some of the coaches' decisions through these first couple of weeks have kind of at times, maybe scratched my head. But I definitely thought that, you know, the Daryl Jones, like you said, that Daryl Jones reverse, that was had nowhere to go. And it felt like you watch it the entire time where it just, there was nothing. So
it's in a moment where the running backs are getting 6 yards a clip every time they touch the ball. Even your passing game was working at that time. And you got behind the downs on you, and you stop, and then you miss your field goal. So you get 0 points out of a drive instead of putting it away like it looked like was going to happen.
Yeah, but I tell you what got this done for the Terps was a pure talent that they have on this roster now. You're starting to see that. And beyond talent, you're starting to see leadership. We talked about the leadership on the defensive side of the ball. One of the question marks that we had about Talia going into, you know, year two of him was, could he step up? Could he face adversity? You know, coming in a situation like this, going on the road in a Big Ten game, could he lead his team to a comeback? He was able to do that as he drove down the field with the game on the line. And statistically, he was our player of the game in this game.
Yeah, we did select him for offensive player of the game. But man, there were arguments in both ways. I mean, the way Talia looked at the beginning of this game, you would have never guessed he was going to be the offensive player of the game. The beginning of this game, we were only not scoring because of him. Like, right. Everyone else seemed to be playing well. Talia, to his credit, didn't do anything catastrophic. He was flustered. You could tell he was happy feet. He was way too pressured. But the mistakes he made were mistakes in the right directions. He was throwing balls low. He was throwing balls outside. He wasn't lofting things into coverage. And so you just saw that, like, the decision process was still better even under duress, because he looked a lot like that Northwestern game without the Northwestern results.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I wanted to bring up with this. That was what I saw early in this game. We all watched this game separately. We all watched this individually until the very end, where I had to kind of guide Ryan through the last couple minutes of the game over the phone. But what I saw early in this game was he seemed to be playing a little too fast. Like you said, he got happy feet with him. Ahmed, I don't know what you saw, but I could see locks on the sideline, basically verbalizing and communicating to Talia to calm himself down, because when he plays that way, sometimes he can get himself into trouble and to force balls into situations that he shouldn't be forcing balls into.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. I mean, I think, you know, even this week, just kind of still highlighted, you know, even when Talia kind of struggles, to me, what's really stuck out is, like you guys said, you know, the lack of these forced throws into these tight windows, the need to make these plays out of nothing. I think he still did a good job of staying patient and not, like, you know, staying efficient. That's the biggest thing. He knows he's a dual threat quarterback, but he's still using his legs to his advantage to extend those plays. And then if need be, there were a couple of times where he tucked it in and run, made the positive play. But he did mention in post game, I believe Loxie did as well, that they were expecting Illinois to play a lot more man, and the Illini defense just really shifted around their coverages. So it sounded like Maryland was kind of, I don't want to say unprepared, but unprepared for what they were actually facing. So I think that was a big reason why a lot of these, the passing plays early on just did not yield success. And but again, what really sticks out to me is just the decision making from Talia. I mean, even on a bad day, it helps just winning the turnover battle, and they didn't do that too much the first 2 years.
Quote unquote bad day. I mean, the guy threw 32 of 43 for 350 yards. He had the touchdown, 6 rushes for 25 yards as well. He also had a big 41-yard touchdown pass to Demas that got called back to a bullshit chop block. I mean, a complete BS chop block call to me.
Couldn't have been a prettier pass. Demas, I don't even think he had to move. He just, like, kind of slightly reached his hands to his chest level, and the ball was laying in his hand.
Right.
Completely untried.
Right.
Yeah, it was an amazing play. Yeah, it wasn't a bad game. Absolutely not. You don't get offensive player of the game from us right. for a bad game. It was a bad quarter, and it was a little shaky.
What I wouldn't even say quarter. Bad. It was just a rough start. That's all. It was a little bit... Like, there were nerves. You could see. I think he kind of wanted to see what we wanted to see. We wanted to see them get out to an early lead, jump out straight. And when the big play wasn't there, he got a little panicky. But that seemed to subside once he got into the second quarter.
And this is a good sign, honestly. Like, the fact that they dropped 8 into coverage to play against him is the respect that he's now gaining. The fact that he's shown people across the nation that he's our biggest weapon, that our wide receivers are his biggest weapon, and that's what you got to worry about. And I think if you're dropping 8, we're going to have plenty of room for these running backs. So with a week to prepare for this and to know that this is not the last team that's going to do this. There's more teams. Now, they're probably going to mix it up more and not just be Illini and just sit back with 8 deep and just hope it lasts the whole game. But you're going to see this again, and he'll be more prepared for it next time.
Yeah, well, I mean, statistically on the year, he sits at 940 passing yards, 7 touchdowns. Key thing here, 0 interceptions through 3 games now. At this point, he had 7 touchdowns and 7 interceptions in 4 games last season. So light years ahead. He's playing lights out football. He's a dog. And I say that as a term of endearment, dog. So he's playing great. Move on to the running back position as well. Let's talk a little bit about Fleet Davis. I think Fleet Davis had a big game in this game. He had a costly turnover. We'd mentioned that already. But he was.
I don't know who's not going to fumble that ball, though. You were upside down, bent over backwards. Exactly. I don't know what kind of somersault hit that was.
Exactly. He was on the fringe of us, you know, going for player of the week as well on the offensive side of the ball. 11 rushes.
I fought for you. I fought.
Yeah. I wanted him. The only thing that did it for me was how clean of a game Talia played versus the one turnover that Fleet Davis did have. But again, 11 carries, 62 yards, a touchdown, 6 receptions, 44 yards and a touchdown out of the backfield. Ahmed, I mean, this guy is the complete back. He's playing really well.
I'm really impressed with him because, you know, we mentioned kind of going into the season that this was the first year where Fleet Davis is kind of getting that, you know, that alpha dog RB1 kind of role. And I love the way he runs. I remember when he was younger, you know, freshman, sophomore year, though, just he struggled at times, you know, maintaining north, south, you know, run style. And I think he's doing a much better job at that this year. Obviously, like we mentioned, you know, the wide receiver, the quarterback, the passing attack is there. So the lanes are going to be open for Fleet Davis. And I think he's efficient for the most part. Like you guys said, obviously that fumble was a huge momentum swing. But also just his ability to catch out of the backfield, too, is what makes him kind of that every down back for this offense. So I really like him. I thought he had another decent game. Obviously, you know, 11 rushes, 62 yards, 44 receiving yards on 6 catches. So I like him. I was definitely thoroughly impressed with it.
And then our big boy was also back there doing work. Penny Boone also ran hard. 3 rushes for 23 yards. That's making the best of when you get on the field. Maybe we see him a little bit more on this next game.
Yeah, I'd like to see a little bit more out of him. He looks promising. Again, I think we're pretty happy so far with the running back by committee that we have and the depth that we have at that position. But we got to talk about the wide receivers as well. Of course, Dante Demas caught everything in this game. We talked last week about the couple of drops that he had. Well, he didn't drop a single thing in this game. 8 catches, 77 yards. Would have had
robbed on that deep one.
Exactly.
Would have had his 100
yards. Would have had his 100 yards and would have had a touchdown on that big play that was called back by a BS shot block. But Dante Demas looked great in this game. And Rock, you got to give Rock his credit, man. His slant came up big in this game.
every time he does it. This one's a little bit deeper. I don't know if we can call it a full slant. It might be more of a corner or something, but it's the same shape. Right. My man comes across Talia's face. He's getting that ball and he's going to the house. So right. This one, he brought us down into the red zone to get us set up for that game winning field goal.
Yeah, I thought also Deshaun Jones was another guy. He didn't play. You know, he found his way onto the field, and I feel like maybe he's kind of on that cusp of wide receiver 3, wide receiver 4. But you know, this has been probably the third or fourth time where I've noticed this season where he gets a hard hit and the defender doesn't wrap up, and you know, 9 times out of 10, a receiver might go out of bounds, lose his balance. But he just does a really good job of fighting hard, and maintaining that balance, and still still finding a way to get upfield. I really like the chip that he plays with.
He looked this week, he looked much healthier than he looked last week. He looked a little timid last week, but this past week he looked good. He looked real good.
Yeah,
that was a huge play, especially on the game tying drive where he broke the tackle driving down the end of the game. That was probably one of the best plays of the game. That was another one of my, you know, arguments. The game winning kicks, obviously, what everybody's thinking about, but the maybe the most impressive thing that happened that day was that Deshaun Jones play.
Now, one of the things that was a surprise, at least to me, because if you listened to the show last week, my prediction was Chigakonkwo was going to have a big game. I thought he'd have 5 to 7 catches, 70 yards, you know, a touchdown in this game. No work out of the tight end group at all in this game, at least in the pass game. He was obviously out there doing work in the run game and blocking and whatnot. What do you think this was? Do you think this was a game plan to stick outside and just not get to the tight ends? Or you think they were playing good coverage on the tight ends, or what's going on in this game?
I think Chig is also battling that 100% health right now, and I think that's also playing into it a little bit. I did see him at times in the first half where he was coming in and out. And I actually got a text during the game and it was like, I don't think I've seen Chig. And I was like, no, he was out there. I know, I believe it was second half where he almost had that, the catch along the sideline on third down. But yeah, I mean, just overall, I think him and Corey Dyches, just trying to balance it out. But I think that's maybe been the biggest surprise that we haven't seen in so far this season is that the Loxies, if you mentioned, you know, the tight ends, how focal they are and integral they are in the offense and what they do. And we really haven't seen, even though, you know, Okonkwo had back-to-back games with the touchdown, you didn't really see the consistent volume or, you know, targets in that room. But I do think that Maryland has the talent and the skill set and the balance between Okonkwo and Dyches. You know, if a defense forgets about them, especially in the red zone, I think that Maryland knows that they can find those guys and attack. But I am a little bit surprised that the lack of targets going their way.
I just worry with this being the first Big Ten game and the tight ends disappearing, that this could be that Tyler Mabry issue. The fact that it wasn't a Tyler Mabry problem, it was a offensive line problem, and he needed to stay and help so much that he was unable to get out into the passing routes. So the line looked pretty good for my vision, but I don't know, you know, everything about it, and I didn't see Talia getting hit every play. No. But it scares me with the Big Ten starting that all of a sudden they disappeared. So I'll be real happy to be proven wrong, but that's my only worry with this being the game they disappeared on.
Yeah, it was definitely alarming. Like you said, I mean, Loxley's offense has always been predicated around tight end success and tight end usage. So it is a little bit surprising, but hopefully, again, you don't want to show all your cards early on in the year. So hopefully we'll use some of that later on in some of the big games and situations where we actually need it. But let's flip sides. Let's go over to the defensive side of the ball. Overall, I mean, what I think I was most impressed with in this game was the secondary as a unit. Considering we were down our number two corner in this game, we got to see a lot of our depth. And that's one of the first things that jumped off in this game was that the secondary played really, really well, considering how low on the depth chart we were.
Yeah, we had an unfortunate amount of depth. We already came in injured, as we talked about last week. And then we had an ejection early of Mr. Gator, Levante Gator, with a targeting call, which was totally the right call. But I feel bad for the kid because you could almost see what was happening there. Like, he was stuck in the middle of, am I going to try to bat down and intercept this ball, or am I going to sack this quarterback? And he jumps up with both hands like he's trying to bat the ball down and realizes he didn't throw the ball, and then kind of like hutches down
right
to make the contact and stop the quarterback, and just pummels the guy with his helmet. And it's a clear targeting call, but I don't feel there was malicious behind it. I wish this was back in the day with the targeting one, targeting two. I don't know if somebody would have thrown him out, but it's definitely was the right call, but unfortunate for the kid.
Yeah, I mean, like you guys said, I mean, I think this is the first game where, you know, we all knew that there was a lot of talent on that back end, but to not have Deontay Banks, like you guys said, and to be down Lamonte Gator, you know, you see a guy like Corey Coley, who played a lot, especially in that second half. Kenny Bennett was in plenty of times in that second half, so you know,
we got to see our number zero without a name confuse the heck out of the announcers.
Yeah.
Calling him Terrence Lewis.
Yeah, for like a solid 3 seconds, I was like, oh my God, is that Terrence Lewis out there? Like, I was like, how did I miss this? But I was kind of relieved that it wasn't Terrence Lewis.
I'm going to tell you this. You shouldn't have listened to anything the announcers said in this game, because they were absolutely horrible.
So bad. My man was obsessed with wind. He kept saying everyone was getting the wind knocked out of him.
Nick Cross clearly grabbing at his ankle and his leg. Yeah. And he's like, yeah, I think he got the air knocked out.
Cross is laying on the ground in an athletic trainer is working on his knee and his ankle, which was either a calf cramp or looking at his knee and ankle, either the only two options. And he goes, yeah, I think he's got the wind knocked out. That was like the fifth time he said somebody got the wind knocked out. Yeah. Bro, where do you think wind's kept?
Yeah.
It's not your leg, bro.
No, and they also can't say Tagovailoa, which is...
No.
Oh, I know.
I mean, I can't get too mad at him, because it's really hard to say.
It is hard. I did have to...
It's a really deep roster. This is not the Ravens where you can memorize like 30 guys. There's so many players.
Talia's name is the program right now. You better at least get that one right.
Yeah, we got to get that one right.
Yeah.
But staying in the secondary, our defensive player of the game in this game for the second time now, Nick Cross... Can this guy make just a normal form tackle? Because I swear every tackle that he makes is a blow-up hit, like a Madden-style hit-stick hit. every time. It's not a problem because he doesn't miss them, but
they leave their feet, so it's fine. I think he made a nice wrap-up tackle on their ginormous 7-foot-tall tight end because he knew, like, hitting that tree was not going to be the right plan.
Yeah.
Right. But other than that, he just ended everybody. We were talking with Fred. I said he reminds me of Bernard Pollard for the Ravens back in the day. Just like, as soon as they started calling, like, unsportsmanlike 15-yard penalties for these hard hits, he's like, I retire, I'm out.
Yeah, I don't think you're gonna see Nick Cross twerking in a locker room like you did with Bernard Pollard, but yeah, whatever, that's a whole nother thing.
I also think just part of it with Nick Cross is just like I mentioned, I think last week, it's just the fact that he's starting to play like really smart and fast, and I think it's all just kind of clicking for him, and just that he's able to really like recognize and diagnose and break down these plays like a lot faster than he did those first 2 years. So I think part of it is just kind of him having that speed to get himself in the right place. I think it's a valid argument just considering how poorly Maryland's defense and especially the secondary tackled on Friday night.
Yeah.
Yeah. The rest of them all try to be Nick Cross, and then that doesn't work out always for them.
No.
Right.
No, it was not a good show.
Well, Nick had 7 tackles on the night, 3 pass breakups, and obviously the huge interception late to get the ball back for the Terps, which helped seal that win for him. So again, he's our defensive player of the game. But this was a unit, again, that was tough to pick, just like we talked about being hard on
Definitely
the offensive
was.
Side. The defensive side, you especially on the defensive line, you had a lot of guys that stood out. One guy that Ryan and I were texting each other back and forth, Greg Rose, who? Like, I know I'd heard the name before, but didn't expect him to get a whole lot of playing time. But Kite was out in this game, and you had another injury on the line with Finau, right? It was Finau that went down a couple times, I think, in this game.
Twice, yeah.
Yeah, so Greg Rose got a lot of run in this game. This is a kid, I know Maryland on their website and through their Twitter account kind of painted out the story for you. Started at a junior college, transfers in as a walk-on, earns a scholarship in camp, which was the whole Kevin Durant announcement on the Zoom call thing, which was really cool for them to do. Starts the opener, and then in this game makes 2 sacks to set up the game-winning drive in this game. Unreal. What a story. That's like shit that you make a movie out of.
Yeah, you gotta look at this too. We got Kevin Durant giving out scholarships around here. Maybe if Locks was a football coach back then, we could have Kevin Durant stay around for the basketball program too. Apparently Locks can just pick up the phone and anybody answers.
You gotta watch what you say about Kevin Durant though. He gets a little sensitive. You gotta watch him. He'll come back at you on social media.
Oh man, that burner account's gonna be hitting up Shell and Tell this week.
Yeah. Oh man,
I'm here for it.
This guy was an absolute monster. Those last 2 drives with those 2 sacks, two completely different sacks, completely bull rushed his tackle.
Yeah,
right back in and over the quarterback was the first sack, which was just some straight manpower. Just love seeing that. And then the next sack, he got right by his guy with a nice rip move straight under the quarterback by himself. This guy's got some skills, and when you need to find that diamond in the rough to come in with the JUCO guys and really be showing out, it's pretty amazing, especially with Jess coming off as a walk-on.
Yeah, I mean, like you guys said, just the impact of those 2 plays. I mean, great. Honestly, if he didn't make one of those 2 plays, not sure Maryland would have been able to pull out that win. I believe it was that second one. Illinois was about at like the Maryland 40 or 35 yard line.
Right.
They were approaching scoring opportunity. So, just really, really, obviously a pivotal player. And like you guys mentioned, Maryland brought in a lot of talent. So they have a couple freshmen where, they're finding their way onto the field already. But for a guy, Greg Rose, who after he picked up the scholarship, I remember asking some people and they were like, he's more than just, what he does on the field, off the field. He's just embodies what Mike Locksley wants. So for him to kind of do that and see his rise go through preseason camp going into the season to help secure the first Big Ten win of the season. Like you guys said, I mean, it's in about 15 years, we're going to see someone in Hollywood writing a story about this.
Yeah,
so,
right.
So he was the first person that we came to our hearts. He was the very first person we go, obviously, Greg Rose, player of the game.
Right.
And then we started looking at the stats, and the reason Greg Rose didn't get player of the game is that there was another man on that line that stats were even better than his.
Greg Rose.
So we moved on.
Greg Rose was not my first choice, in fairness. My choice, the guy I've been high on all year, and I think he continues to work his way towards a potential NFL roster at the end of this year. Sam,
but more importantly, a defensive player of the game for Shelton.
Yes, obviously. Exactly. More important. Way more important. But Sam O, man, continues to show up every week, every game. He's flying around the ball. He's always disruptive in the backfield. Six tackles in this game. Another pair of sacks. Leads the team in sacks now on the year. Ahmed, I mean, did you expect this kind of year out of Sam O? Because to me, it seems like it kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting it at this level. But I did think that just with him returning along with alongside Masai Nasili and Ami Finau, I thought that the defensive line as a whole would be able to kind of take that next step. But I think I agree with you guys. I think Sam O has kind of been that alpha dog along the defensive line so far this year. I mean, it's not even just, you know, like flashes. I mean, it's been pretty consistent. I think he looks a little bit slimmer, but he has a pretty, he's improved on that first step. And he's been able to really seal the edge really well. I really like him. I think he's been a huge asset. And like you said, I wouldn't surprise me if he ends up being, you know, sixth, seventh round draft pick, right, or even if he's an undrafted free agent. Like, I think he's a guy where, you know, through these first three games, you know, he's put some really good things on film. So, yeah, really impressed and highlights his return for a super senior year is even more pivotal.
Who knew that super senior year came with a who knew his super senior year came with a Superman cape? I mean, the transformation here is unbelievable.
I mean, his motor is ridiculous from start to finish, quarter one to quarter four. He never quits. There's a lot to like about Sam O, but again, there's just a lot to like about this defense as a whole. Unfortunately, Gotay was out again this week. So we had Brandon Jennings out there again starting. Now he had a few miskeys in this game, especially in coverage. He got hit through the hole in a couple of plays. It drove him back a little bit, which you haven't seen that out of Brandon yet. He's such a big physical presence. I still had a good game in this game, but there were definitely some communication issues and maybe some just misreads on some coverages.
Well, they had their own Penny Boone out there. That freshman running back of theirs is going to be a problem for a long time. My man looking like a bus out there rolling people over. So I don't think there wasn't enough tape on him either for them to be shown. Though that was the two lucky breaks that Maryland got, is that they were on their third string running back by the end of that game. That was the lucky breaks we got. Plenty of things broke wrong for us in that game, but not having those boys not out there at the end surely helped that comeback.
Well, we talked about the whole, you know, Teyon Fleet Davis fumble that could have changed this game. But the other thing, man, it seems to only happen to the Terps type of thing. The fumble by the running back that was picked up by another wide receiver that goes in for the touchdown, that seems to only happen to us. Is it just me?
No, absolutely. You make a great play that causes you to give up 6 points.
Right.
What other team has this happened to?
Right.
The Ravens did the last night. They fumbled the ball, recovered, and scored their own touchdown. that was a 1 yard line. This was a 70 yard gain.
Yeah. I was hoping for like a whistle. I thought like, well, maybe if they pick it up, they can't advance the ball and the ball's going to be dead there or something in my brain. I'm like, no, Fred, you just made that rule up. You just made that rule up.
It's not a purposeful fumble forward situation, right?
I mean, to me, it just kind of highlighted, I mean, it was a fluke play, like you guys, I 100% agree, but I think it was kind of I guess it highlighted when the tackling issues, like I mentioned. I mean, I just thought that was something where you know, it kind of highlighted, you know, this when you're not able to execute on defense, these are the types of stuff that happen. So I don't know, maybe it's just a weird explanation or, you know, how I justified it, but I felt like it was a bit of karma for the defense to acknowledge that, you know, if they just took care of what they needed to, they wouldn't have been in the situation. So, but yeah, I mean, what a fluke play on second play of the fourth quarter for Illinois to take the lead. I mean, I was definitely a little bit pessimistic about Maryland's chances once that play happened.
Right. That's it for me. That's what I was going to say, man. Like, I saw a lot of negativity out there early for the Terps fans. I was not on board with it.
I had to get out of the Thunder Room because those guys.
Gotta get out of the Thunder Room.
Whatever it's called.
We love all you, but all you and your feelings way too early in that game. And it just all of Terps Twitter in general was just like, here we go again. This is us. Oh, but the whole time I was still like, no, we're good. Like, this is an away game. This is a competitive thing. You got to make sure you stay in this and you can break it out late, stay close, all these things. But that moment I was like, I felt the script had been written. I was like, if that's the way it scores, this is just already predestined. This is an Illinois win. It was supposed to be from the beginning, and it is what it is. And that was the only time I lost hope. But to the Terps' credit, none of them lost hope at all. Yeah. I've seen plenty of teams we've talked on here before that straight quit. There was zero quit in these guys, zero. Yep. And they all fought. In fact, they played at a whole different level. The only other time they played like that was coming out of half, which again was them embarrassed and steamrolling people. But after that play, they came out with a reckless abandon. Talia really showed off. That's where most of his stats showed up, was after that play. And you can just see how much it meant to these guys, to the point where after this winning play, you see Talia going out there to Coach Lox, saying, you know, like, emotionally, I got you, Coach. And he's like, you know, Lox, I know you do. You know, it's that moment really, really showed a lot. Like,
it did.
Like, that quarterback is playing for his coach, for his team. He is playing for something bigger than himself. And it really got me right where, you know, right in the heart.
Yeah. I mean, we, like I said earlier, we talk a lot about, you know, Ruben and Nick on the defensive side, obviously being the clear cut leaders on that defense. Who was going to be that guy on the offensive side? We obviously, at the quarterback position, you want a guy like Talia to step up, but we hadn't seen that last year because obviously he was brand new to the system, brand new to the offense.
Super young.
This was his statement game, I feel like, to show to people that even through it, adversity on the road, he could prove that he could come back and get this team in a position to win, which leads us to our next point, because the winning unit in this game was actually the special teams unit. Now, the special teams unit didn't do great as a whole, which we're going to talk a little bit about, but Petrino, man, continues to stay hot. He was 2 for 3 on field goals in this, which by weird coincidence, all were from 32 yards in this game. I thought that was really, really strange. All three field goals, 32 yards.
2 for 3 from 3-2.
But he makes
to
the
win
game,
by three.
Makes the game winner. I said in an interview that this was actually his first ever game winner, even going back to his, you know, high school days and his, you know, Pop Warner days. First game winner ever, comes at a big, big time for the Terps, and it was a huge win.
Yeah, it was absolutely huge. It was not only that, but just the extra points. I mean, I was leaving work. I got stuck till midnight, so I was able to watch 99% of the game early. But then at the end, I'm having to leave through the parking garage, get in my car. The stupid Oriole game was on 105.7, so I'm trying to pull up my phone to stream the radio feed through there. And Fred calls me and goes, "I'm gonna vomit. They're gonna miss this extra point." And I'm like, "What are you talking about?" I said, "So they scored?" He's like, "Yeah, they scored and we're down by one. I'm going to vomit."
I couldn't control my emotions, man. It's just
so two things, man. Like, he could have easily missed that extra point. We've done that plenty of times, and where you made this huge comeback for nothing. So he nails that extra point and then comes back to get him in position for a game winning field goal, the first in his career, and he drills it. I mean, good for you, man. We gave him the play of the game. And he deserves every bit of it. I hope we don't need you all that often. I hope we can win by more than this last, but I'm glad we have you.
Yeah. No, it was pretty cool. I thought it was honestly just like you guys said, just the you know, we talked about the fight that this team showed. I thought just the ability for Maryland to kind of cap this off and have Petrino do this and knock through his first game winning kick ever. And a game like this in the first road game of the year, in the first conference game, just kind of highlighted, you know, things might be going up in year three.
So my question to you is, though, outside of Petrino and how good he's looked, everything else about special teams is still a mess. Special teams coordinator Ron Zook, he was a special team coordinator. At least he had special teams experience in the NFL, if I'm not mistaken, right? That's where he came from, was the NFL.
Yep.
What is going on? What is it going to take to get this under control? Because Ryan and I talk about this all the time. It seems like a lot of this stuff and a lot of the mistakes that they're making are basic fundamental mistakes that they just, no Division I collegiate team should be making.
Before Ama gives a respectful answer, I'm going to give a real quick one. Go for it. He is a special teams coordinator and associate head coach. Am I right, Ahmed?
Yeah.
He spent a little bit too much time associate head coaching and not enough time with the damn special teams unit, because there's some basic ass shit we're missing. So get back there to your first job and go do the special team stuff and let Lox handle the head coach stuff. Thank you.
Yeah. What doesn't make sense to me is the consistency that Maryland has. And I get why Tarheeb still is back there, but I mean, this is the third straight game where we've seen a muffed punt.
Right.
And I know Deshaun Jones has kind of had some trouble. I believe it was one where he just kind of bobbled it last week against Howard. But what's weird is that, you know, I've, you know, just being at practice, you know, a lot of players are staying after practice to field these punts. And you see about 10 to 15 different guys there. I mean, I've seen Dino Tomlin, I've seen Ty Felton, and I understand, you know, Ty, love him. I think he's going to be a great player, but, you know, maybe the four redshirt rule. Marcus Fleming was a guy who, I mean, I mentioned that, you know, beginning of fall preseason camp where I kind of saw him as him being the guy. And he hasn't really seen a ton of time at wide receiver. I think he only caught one ball this weekend. I think he only has maybe two or three catches on the season. But he's a guy where he has that natural shifty ability. He was tabbed as a guy that, you know, can make an impact in the third phase. I think Maryland does have options. I'm not sure that I agree with, you know, Dante Dimas going back there, but what doesn't make sense to me is the inability to try a new face out back there, because there's been so many guys consistently staying after practice that are fielding these.
It's not even just the returner, though. It's the fundamentals of people in front of him not getting out of the way of balls as they're coming in and blocking. It's beyond just who's back there fielding the kicks, at least for me, true. At least what I'm seeing. And again, for somebody who has NFL experience with special teams, it can't be knowledge and his ability to teach. It's got to be something beyond that. Like said, Ryan, either he has too many other assignments and things that he has to worry about that he can't put enough attention on that, because it seems to be a really easy fix. And this is coming from somebody that has no special teams experience.
Yeah, Fred, that's what I was talking about last week with Ahmed. As a bad football player, that's where I spent a lot of time there. Well, the problem with me is less the returner, because returners are going to muff punts every now and then. If it's a consistent thing, it's a problem. But right. Like, catching a punted ball is one of the hardest things in all of football. 100%. It does some weird stuff in the air. It's a weird angle. It's not easy.
Yeah.
But what is easy is what the rest of the people are doing. Like, and week one with WVU, it was all punt returners for me, because they weren't making the right calls. They weren't calling people to clear. They weren't telling people what's going on. But we've now seen it multiple times where at least visually we're seeing the clear. Maybe they got to figure out how to be louder. Maybe they got to figure out how to actually project, and or their jammers need to be like looking at the player. If you're not able to hear these things, just to see these signals away. But if you look back at just one punt, just look at the final punt, the one we needed to win this game, the punt that came back there, it was within 3 feet, 2 to 3 feet of our jammer out there. It almost bounced right off his forehead. And if he does that, it's going to be their ball, and we don't get to win this game, and we're talking a whole different story right now. It's completely unacceptable. And on that play, the returner was signaling to get away. Maybe he wasn't being loud enough, I don't know, but all I can go is off the visual signs, and he was doing his job and nobody else was.
And that's my point of frustration with this whole thing. Fortunately enough, we're 3-0. It hasn't cost us a game.
It will yet. Cost us.
Yet.
The turnover is coming, because it's just consistent.
Yet. I just, when we get down into these tougher teams and Big Ten play, I don't want that to be the reason that we lose a game. You know what I mean? If we're going to lose a game, I don't want it to fall on the shoulders of special teams. I want them to outscore us. I want, I want us to lose the game fair and square, not something that seems so silly and so easily, fixed and addressed.
A ball bouncing off somebody's shoulder that's not looking is not the way I want to lose a game that's important. It doesn't make sense.
Right.
You want to have your best playing against their best. Like we talked against with Howard, like the way you beat our defense is don't play our defense, because they've been that good.
Right.
You know, right now we got a bit of a war of attrition. We'll see how long we can stay that good, but I'm hoping we can stay good, because we seem to have some reinforcements here we haven't had in years.
Yeah.
But we got to get that cleaned up. That's not good. We did have a hell of a team or special teams play with the blocked field goal. You know, got your hand on that. That was big things. The kick return didn't look anywhere near as bad. I don't know if they just didn't have the talent or whether we're playing better. It's kind of hard to tell.
Right.
Because honestly, when we were getting beat on the first one, it kind of seemed like they were keeping their lanes. They might not have been, you know, pacing right together. So you got those cutback angles. But I don't know. But punt has been consistent. Every game has been the exact same problem.
Yeah. Yep. It's I feel like that just the punt game right now is just where Maryland has, I think, the most issues, problems.
Opportunity for improvement.
Opportunity for improvement. There I like it.
Glass
can we
full.
Can we do
like
that?
Show title.
See if we take advantage of that opportunity.
Yeah, right. All right. So like I said, it's not all doom and gloom or anything. We're just not going to paint a Bob Ross pretty picture here. We're going to make sure that we tell the entire story, right? And special teams is still an area that we need to work on. But we're 3-0, moving on to our next opponent this weekend against Kent State, who right now sits on the season 1-2. They're out of the Mid-American Conference. So far on the year, like I said, 1-2. They lost their opener to Texas A&M 41-10. They did come back with a big win, 60-10 over VMI, which was Reese Udinski's former school.
Yeah, it's a Reese Udinski comeback. Like, you're right. Take up for your boys.
Well, I hope we're in a position where Reese can get out there in the second half and stick it to him, because that means that Maryland's great. Up by a good bit. So hopefully that happens. But then this past...
Hopefully that happens the right way.
The right way. Right.
Where we
I didn't even go there, Ryan. I didn't go there. Don't go there.
Not that full, man.
But this past Saturday, this was kind of a preview game for our next two opponents, because you had Kent State going up against number 4, Iowa, in this game. Iowa wins this game 30-7, which, yeah, I mean, 30-7 is a respectful, big win. But when you're talking about a number 4 team in the country, doesn't seem all that impressive to me. I didn't get a chance to watch it, Ryan. So tell us a little bit about what you guys saw in this game. I mean, what was your takeaway from both teams?
It was a slow start for both teams. It was a bit of a grind fest at the beginning. Iowa's defense looks really good. They're legit. I'm not impressed by their offense. I don't know that they're going to do much if our full strength defense, I think, can barely control that very high ranked team. But first, we got to get by Kent State, and Kent State, they definitely have flashes. They're named appropriately, the Golden Flashes. They got plays that look good, but it's just not consistent. They don't have I don't think they have the staying power. I think that they're going to, they'll slip by because they got the speed. They got a great quarterback. They'll score on us. This is not a Howard game. But I don't know that they're going to be able to keep up with the rate that we're going to score. I don't think their defense is going to slow us down much. I think this 30 that Iowa hung is very capable for us. Maybe significantly more points we can hang on.
So
on
you're
Kent State
saying
would be
there's a chance with
I'm
Reese.
Saying there's a chance.
Ahmed, what did you see in this game? Did you watch it?
Yeah, I watched it. I just had it on in the background. Got a chance to watch a little bit of it. But what really sticks out to me, and I know I've told you guys, told some people, but I know a couple of the coaches over at Kent State. So I've been steadily hearing about them for a couple of months now. And Dustin Crum is a guy that they feel very, very confident in. And he's shown that. I mean, he had an NFL grade following last season, came back, apparently was told that Mel Kiper had Dustin Crum as a top 10 quarterback for the 2022 NFL draft.
Wow.
And he's got a pretty good arm, really good pocket presence, and he's a dual threat quarterback. He actually currently sits third on the team in rushing yards per game, has 454 passing yards and 3 touchdowns through those 3 opening games. I really like him. I think he does a really good job in pocket. And I think I mentioned to you guys pregame, but I think he's going to be the best quarterback that Maryland has faced so far in 2021. I'm not saying he is the best, but he's going to, kind of set the stage, especially going into conference play. And then kind of outside of Dustin Crum, they have running back Marquez Cooper, who actually just saw Octavian Smith. He's a recruit, obviously, from Paint Branch High School. And he mentioned Marquez is his cousin, because Marquez went to Quince Orchard. He got a chance to play with Demian Robinson, who's obviously Maryland's true freshman linebacker. And then a couple other familiar names, Juan Wallace, Maryland fans might remember him flash from the past. He went over to H.G. Woodson. H.G. Woodson had a couple of guys that cycle. Former Maryland safety, Antoine Richardson. He's let's just say he's doing a good job of motivating his teammates for this weekend's game. So I would not be surprised to see some trash talking along the back line.
I like it.
I definitely agree, Brian. You mentioning that this is not like a Howard type tune up. This is definitely not. I 100% agree with that. I think that this is going to be a little bit tougher. I think Kent State has an opportunity to score some points if they have the tackling issue, things like that again. Should be interesting on Saturday. I think it's a sneaky quality opponent.
It absolutely is. So you kind of slyly said you know some coaches over there. Tell us more about this, man. We're college buddies. You grew up. Tell us more about how somebody comes from Maryland to be a Kent State head coach.
It's actually kind of wild. So I lived in the View 2. It was the first year that that summer that that building went up. So I went, my freshman year was 2011. Yeah, it was pretty nice. And it was, he lived, what was it, three doors down from me. And then we actually just had a mutual friend. And that's how I got a chance to know him. So he, the college coach I know, he's over at Kent State now, obviously, he actually was at Maryland for one semester. Then he went down to Florida, where he coached under Joker Phillips.
Oh, wow.
Obviously the former Maryland wide receiver coach. And when Joker Phillips was there, Durkin was there. So he got a chance to know him. Honestly, it sounds like Durkin is just incredibly detail oriented. But so, you know, my friend had things, good things to say about him and Joker. And then, yeah, he's been at Kent State now for about 3-4 years now. Loves it. You know, sounds like they do a really good job just kind of building the culture, things like that. But yeah, it's definitely a very windy path. You know, we kind of reconnected, I think it was the first year or second year, when I was over, at another site. So yeah, it's pretty cool. So I got a chance to kind of get a little different perspective on that program. So, you know, should be a good one on Saturday.
That's awesome.
It'll be good to give you some bragging rights, and it'll be good. You know, I rooted for Antoine Richardson harder than anybody at times, man. I was really excited for him, especially that year before he blew out his knee in spring ball. But you know, if you want to jump ship and you want to talk trash about your old team, we got to hand you a spanking, right? We got to make sure you earn that.
Yeah. I mean, on the schedule, just looking at this, I had no idea there were so many Maryland ties and implications in this game. So that gets you a little bit more. Right. It gets you a little bit more amped up for this game. You know, again, this is, yes, it's a tune up for Iowa, but this isn't a Howard type tune up, like you said. I mean, this is a game that you know, if you don't come out there with your A game.
Temple type tune up.
Yes.
So let's pay attention.
Yeah, that's what everybody kept saying about this past game against Illini, is that it had freaking
That's what
Temple
they said
vibes.
At halftime, though. Nobody was calling it a Temple game before the game, and that's what made me upset about people going at halftime being like, this is Temple. No, it's not Temple. This is a Big Ten opponent. Temple was, we didn't pay attention. We overlooked them, and then we couldn't dig out of a hole.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, Crum, you mentioned him. Like you said, he's that dual threat quarterback out there. But, you know, that's all fine and dandy. Who does he have around him? We talked a little bit about Marquez Cooper at the running back position. They also have a pair of wide receivers, Nakeem Johnson and Kashun Abram, that you're going to have to keep an eye on in this game. Both of them a little over 100 yards receiving on the season. Again, this defense and the way that they're playing right now, I don't have any worries or concerns about this game or the fears that I think we're going to lose this game. It's just there are some target areas that we need to improve on and some things that I like to see come out of this game. So let's go into our predictions for this week game. Last week, all of us had the Terps, so we were all on that. I think Ahmed ended up having the closer score of the three of us again. So Ahmed, now you have
still
two.
On a roll.
You got two picks to click to my one.
Two and you only missed by 1 point for that first week. So yeah. Ahmed's been crushing.
I'm just sitting here
homering it all day.
I'm gonna do the Wheel of Fortune dollar pick, or what is it? Not Wheel of Fortune. What's the Price is Right? Price is Right dollar pick, just to make sure I get the score. All right. Ryan, we'll let you lead off with this game. What do you see happening in this game? What are you looking at score-wise, and who are you looking to show out?
Like I said, I think they have some offense. I trust in our defense to do a lot of good things, but, you know, things happen when you're playing against speed. Things happen when you're playing against a good quarterback that's going to find whenever you have that missed coverage. So I got them scoring a couple on us, but I don't think they're going to slow us down too much. I think we're going to really put up some points. Again, I think this is – well, you just saw out of Fleet Davis, one of the reasons that you didn't just jump on the table and fight for him. I think this is what you're going to get for Fleet Davis every week. I think he's going to get 100 yards mixed through the air, mixed through with rushing. And I think he's going to show out. Our wide receivers are who they are. They're going to be fighting for it every week. Somebody's going to score twice, or they're both going to score. That's what it is. So I have us winning 35-20. I think that's a pretty reasonable prediction. I think that'll do just fine for getting us that undefeated 4-0 and looking really good matchup on television the next week.
I like it. Ahmed, what do you see happening in this game?
I got Maryland going 41-14. Like we said earlier, I think Maryland has the firepower offensively to kind of take control of this game. The biggest thing that I want to see is just the improved tackling. I think that's kind of the biggest thing when you're going against the Iowas, yep, the Ohio States, the Penn States. You cannot afford that. And the special teams, obviously, it needs to be corrected, things like that. But I think Maryland's going to win the turnover battle. I think Maryland's going to get, they're going to need to get a little bit complex at times with how they're going to blitz and presenting the different types of fronts to get Crum off balance to confuse him. I think that's going to be the biggest thing. So Maryland wins the turnover battle. Maryland, I'll go Tagovailoa has his third 300-yard game and a 41-17 win, excuse me, as Maryland gets a 4-0 for the first time since 2016.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think Talia has another big game this game, another over 300-yard game. I do think that Teyon Fleet Davis gets his first 100-yard game on the ground in this game as well.
Second,
right. That's right. He did on the – yep, you got it.
That last run that pushed him over the central mark.
Right, that's right. So, yeah, his second 100-yard game on the season. I'm a tight end guy. I was former tight end and all that, so I pay attention to him. I want to see the tight ends get some work in this game. That's where I'm hoping to see the biggest improvement.
Friends going back to the well. He's going to keep predicting it until it happens.
Until it happens. It's got to hit at some point, right? I want to see the tight ends get work.
Eventually.
I just think that Chig is too good of a talent to not utilize. And again, you're going to have to utilize him against some of these bigger teams. You're going to have to get that ball out quickly to the tight end and let him use his strength against those linebackers. I've got the Terps winning this one 33-16. All right, so moving on from that, let's talk a little bit about our mailbag, which we're going to bring back this week. I know you guys, I wasn't here last week, so you guys didn't get a chance to do
mailbag. Look, just call it Fred's mailbag at this point.
That's right.
Nobody messages me. They all message Fred. They want to know what he's talking about. We're going to wait until he shows up.
I didn't open the mailbag until very late tonight, so we didn't get a whole lot of questions, but there were a couple guys out there I thought that had some good questions and wanted to get your takes on it. So Matt from Twitter, at Mr. 3402, he says, what do you think it will take against Kent State for Maryland to actually get into the top 25 this week? So this kind of goes back to what I was saying about the Howard game. And I know, Ryan, your frustrations with not having Talia and the first string offense out of there sooner. It's getting those more points and, you know, running the score up. You don't do that in professional football because it's considered disrespectful and all that stuff. But in college football, when it comes to rankings, those types of things are important. And it's going to take another one of those games. I know they're on the outside, really close looking in. They're in that. What number are they at now? Do you guys know?
30.
They're at 30. Okay, so they're 5 spots out from being in. So they're close. But I think in order to move the needle enough, they're going to have a pretty big blowout win in this game. I think it's going to have to be another like 40, 50-point type game for them to get into the top 25, in my opinion. Unless they're just doing it for the ratings of the showdown with Iowa.
Here we go. Here we are. There's where my honesty comes in. What I honestly believe is a win. 1 point is all it's going to take to put us in the rankings, because when you look at this top 25, there's plenty of teams in there that don't belong. They've beaten no one that matters. They've snuck by terrible teams and they're still ranked, but they have big time TV matchups coming up. So we're going to keep them ranked and make everybody excited. So what I truly believe is we haven't had a big enough television matchup other than week one, where no one was going to put Maryland top 25, deservedly so. We hadn't done anything. So coming up against a top 5 team the next week, undefeated, they'll put us somewhere in the rankings. It might be 25, but with a 1-point victory, they'll put us there. What should take is exactly what I predicted. If you beat these guys by more than 2 scores, that's what the good teams have done against them. That's what the ranked teams that they've played have done against them. Then I think that we should be put in the top 25. But what I believe is that there's Coastal Carolina sitting in here. You got like Texas A&M started at the top 5, and yes, they haven't lost, but they barely snuck by Colorado, right, who just got beat by 30 by Minnesota, and they haven't really had an impressive win against anyone that has any football talent.
Please tell me Miami finally 10. Fell out.
Miami finally fell out. Okay. They were overrated as all get out. Yeah. When I first started looking this week, I was like, I don't know who's going to come out of the top 25 to let us in, because I only saw like 2 teams that had a loss to come out. But then I started looking at who these teams were in the top 25 that haven't done anything. And I'm like, why? What's taking so long to get them out? Oh, they're playing Notre Dame next week. That makes sense. Like, So I honestly think a 1-point victory gets us there. But what should is a 2-point score. That's what should make you feel like we are a top 25 team. What should make the fans feel like we are a top 25 team is a 2-score win. And that's what I got us predicted at.
Yeah, I mean, I think I had Maryland winning 41-17, so I kind of think that
that's gonna
Maryland,
do it. That'll do it.
Exactly. I kind of think so too. But I mean, to me, and I know this is not going to be the answer you guys want to hear, and I apologize, Matt, but the Florida State 62-0 or whatever the hell it was in back in 2013, that thrashing, when as soon as Maryland got in the top 25, that still is the source of my nightmares. So to me,
I'm fine with not being ranked. I hope we're not ranked, like, going into Iowa, because that makes that dog mentality even more. Oh, you don't think we're good enough to be in this stadium? Let's show you. So honestly, I hope I'm wrong. I hope they just decide, oh, this is Maryland, they're not very good. But when you're already talking that West Virginia, like West Virginia is now getting votes. Mm-hmm. They're being voted to be the top 25. So the team that we beat, please put West Virginia in there before Maryland.
Yeah. Right.
See what kind of anxiety comes out of that team then wants to show you who they are.
Right. Yeah. And I agree. I mean, even, you know, I think everyone maybe is expecting Maryland to come out this weekend. So I think if Maryland is not ranked, I mean, I understand that some are like, you know, the disrespect, you know, whatnot. But at the end of the day, if they come out and they're 25th and they lose by 3 or 4 to Iowa at home, and they drop back out of the top 25, is the ranking going to be what justifies your perception of where Maryland is?
Right.
So to me, I have no problem if they win. They're still unranked next week because they'll have every chance to prove it against Iowa. And I think if they prove it against Iowa, if they can keep it a close game, that is what moves the needle.
Yeah, I mean, you got Iowa, you got Penn State, you got Michigan. Like, we're going to have plenty of chances. If you just keep winning, you'll get ranked eventually, I promise. Yeah, right. They won't be able to be ignorant enough to keep you out eventually.
Right.
Yeah. That's my thing.
Yeah, I 100% agree. Our buddy Googs, big fan of Birdland and Shell and Tell, John from Twitter, at jgoogs40. He asks, on a scale of 1 to 10, how worried are you of this game becoming a potential trap game against Kent State? Obviously, with our predictions, I don't think anybody thinks it's going to be a trap game. But again, you don't want to get caught up in that.
That's what a trap game is, right?
Yeah, you don't want to get caught up in that. Looking over it. I believe in the leadership with this program. I really believe that these guys are one day, one week, one game at a time. I don't think that this team will be looking beyond that. Just my opinion on the vibe that's kind of been around that you're seeing on social media and the things that you hear Mike Locksley and the guys talk about, you know, these guys don't want to lose. So I don't think they're going to do anything to screw that up. They're just focused on the task at hand, which right now is Kent State.
I'm a little worried. I'm a little more worried than you are. The score that I predicted shows that what we should do. That doesn't mean that I don't see the worst case scenario of the Temple game coming back to bite us. I do agree with you that the personalities don't seem to fit that as much as the past, but we also have to look back and remember what it was before those games, what we felt like when we shellacked Howard and beat Syracuse, who was one of those overranked opponents. It was like a 23 that ended up being terrible. Like, we felt like we were above it, and hopefully we have not felt that. Hopefully that that Illinois game was enough of a gut check already that, like, we have to come and do our job, because we very clearly, when they did their job, they were head and shoulders better than Illinois, but there was plenty of time in that game where they weren't going to win no matter how much better they were. So hopefully that was enough gut check. I think we'll win, but yes, this has all the rankings or the reasons for a trap game. Not only is it a tiny named opponent in front of the highest ranked person on your schedule right now, but it's on a short week on that Friday game. So like it almost entices the coaches to treat it as an overlooked. Like, let's start looking at game planning for the next one ahead of time.
Right.
So I'm definitely worried. I'd give it an 8. I really would.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty high.
Yeah, that is. That's a little higher, but I mean, I understand that. I mean, I think I feel like it right in between you guys. I feel like maybe I'll go 4 or 5 just because I don't think that Maryland is really overlooking their opponents. I don't get that feeling. I don't feel like that Maryland is at that point where they believe that they're better than anyone. But I think Maryland kind of has Dustin Crum that he has their full attention. I think they'll take care of business, but I don't think they're, I don't know. I'm not worried that they're going to come out, be completely flat and be, you know, maybe look unprepared. Like that's not the Maryland that I'm expecting out of this weekend. But I'm just maybe a little bit concerned about just the secondary. If they do get punched in the mouth, you know, really get punched in the mouth early, how are they going to respond? But I do also think Maryland did a pretty good job of just responding and showing that they can respond to that adversity last week. So
yeah, I really like how week one and week three went, because there was a lot of adversity. There were things that went wrong. These 90-yard kick returns, when you're trying to do, you're doing everything you can do as a defense, but mm-hmm. somebody hands you a hand you can't win with, you know, over and over again. And then with the Illinois game, like I said, if that Demas touchdown doesn't get called back, if the fumble doesn't happen by Fleet Davis, you could have won that game by 24 points. And then I'm even more worried that this is a trap game. So I like how things have happened beforehand to make them realize they're, you know, humbled them to not do it. But, you know, if there is a trap game on the schedule, this is it. Hopefully there is no trap game. Hopefully they are disciplined enough that they can just take care of business.
Yeah. I didn't give a number out there, so I'll throw my number. I think I'm at like a 2 or 3 with it. Again, I'm not super concerned with it. I really believe in the staff, and I believe in the message, and I think that they are that one week at a time type team. So right now, the Terps are 3-0. We're all 3-0 with all of our predictions. We're all on the Terps this week, so hopefully we'll come to you next week with a big prep show for Iowa, the showdown with number 4 Iowa, all sitting at 4-0, us and the Terps. It's exciting times, man. It's exciting times to be a Terps fan, exciting time to be a Ravens fan right now after last night. There's a lot of good things going on, at least in my sports world anyway, for me. I don't know. I know, Ahmed, you're a Redskin fan. That can be debatable.
Oh, Washington football team, sir.
Oh, shoot.
The Washington football
That's
team.
That's right. Golly. That's how little I talk about it. That's how little I talk about it that I forget. But appreciate you guys. Appreciate you guys tuning in, as always. If you want to be a part of the mailbag, make sure you put the alerts on social media. Follow Shell and Tell Pod. Turn on the alerts, and usually about an hour or two prior to the show, we'll put the mailbag post out there. So if you want to get your questions in like we read today, make sure you do that. Check us out again on Twitter, and you can follow our bio link. Our bio link will take you everywhere. If you want to figure out where all of our audio podcasts are, you want to figure out where we are on the web, if you want to get the link to Inside Black and Gold, all of that is on our homepage at our bio link. So make sure you check us out there. Ryan, sign us off.
Yeah, make sure you're following Inside the Black and Gold. Subscribe over there. A lot of great content going on. And if you haven't gotten down to a Terps game, this is a great weekend to do so. 3:30 kickoff. This is a young Terps game. They got a lot of cool things for the kids. So if, you know, your wife's been giving you a hard time, we aren't going to a football game, this is a good one. It's for the kids, honey. Buy one, get one free tickets. One for the, you know, one young Terp ticket for every adult ticket purchase. I think they're $38 for lower bowl and $22 for the upper deck. So get that taken care of. And then there's also a really cool thing before the game. They're doing bounce houses, face painting. They're doing like an NFL combine style thing for the kids. You got to sign up for that. So make sure you find the link.
Can't wait to get my face
sign
painted.
Up beforehand. So we're bringing like, we're rolling super deep this week, but they're like all like 5 and under. we got all these kids going down. We're going to be running the 40-yard dash.
We're all drinking out of sippy cups.
Emma's going to be taking it down for me. We got the 4-year-old section on lock. All right. We're taking this 40 right now. So until, guys, let's get down there. Let's get this business taken care of. And let's set up one of the bigger games we've had in College Park for a long, long time. Until next time, here's to wishing all is well under the show.